Holy, 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 indeed, is the Lord of hosts. The whole earth is full of your glory, O Lord. My dear friends, in Christ Jesus, what a pleasure to be with you for a few moments in the Word on a beautiful Epiphany Sunday morning. I don't know if you're old enough to have your memory go back to this originally, but back on Martin Luther's birthday in the second week in November in 1975, there was a terrible shipwreck in the Great Lakes, one of the worst ever maritime disasters on the Great Lakes. And you might think, should I know this? Is this? You would know it if you have ever listened to any Gordon Lightfoot records. Does that ring a bell? I am talking about the wreck of the Edmund Fitzgerald. You do know about November 10th, 1975. Superior, they said, never gives up her dead when the gales of November come early. It's a beautiful, beautiful, haunting song about a doomed ship. And it's no fun, sort of, because it's like buzzkill to read about the story of the Edmund Fitzgerald, because it's like watching the movie of the Titanic. You know how it's going to end. It's going to end badly. And it sure did. You shouldn't be sailing on Lake Superior in November. You just shouldn't. Superior is a deep, wild lake, and the winter gales are nasty, and they come early. It gets cold up there. Those youpers have a lot more winter than we do. God bless them. I'm glad they're living there so that I don't have to. God, let this is cold enough and snowy enough to be here where we're at. It must have been arrogance. For one thing, it was an experienced crew. They'd all been. That was not their first rodeo. Their captain had done dozens and dozens of dozens of hauls all the way around the Great Lakes, basically working back and forth between Superior, picking up iron ore and hauling it to the mills in Ohio, Toledo and Cleveland. Millennials, this will shock you. We had technology in the 1970s. Seriously, there was like radar and stuff. They had weather forecasting stuff. There were spotters all around. They had radios. They could communicate and track it. But they thought, we know what we're doing. It's just a little rain. It's just some wind. I've seen worse. And they thought, our boat is so big, there's no way that any storm could take it down. The Edmund Fitzgerald was the biggest boat that had ever sailed the Great Lakes. 23,000 tons, fully loaded. And it was fully loaded. So they had ballast. They had thousands of tons of taconite pellets that they were going to haul to steel mills. And yet, moving air and moving water can even destroy steel. Using technology, divers have found the wreck of the Edmund Fitzgerald. It snapped in two. That storm broke its back, and all 29 went to the bottom. There were no survivors. And that's now has become a song and will now live on thanks to Gordon Lightfoot. I want to talk to you about a lake storm, although it was a lake nowhere near as big as Superior. In fact, it was a lake not even as big as Lake Winnebago. That's like our big lake here, inland lake here in Wisconsin. And it isn't even all that very big. You can see across to the other shore. The so-called Sea of Galilee is being flattered by using the name Sea for it. It's like a big fishing lake, really. You can see the other shore. It's not much bigger than where you go bass fishing or water skiing in summer here in Wisconsin. It's about a quarter to a third of the size of Lake Winnebago. But even though its surface area is much smaller than the lake that Fond du Lac and Oshkosh and Appleton sit on, much deeper. Our lake is pretty shallow, actually. Winnebago's like at its deepest is only like 20-some feet. It's like a great big puddle. The Sea of Galilee goes down like this. It's like 120 feet. And not only is it much deeper, it is surrounded by mountains. They've got mountains in Israel far taller than anything in our state. We like to call Illinois people flatlanders, but the Israelis would laugh at our state. They'd say, no, you're flatlanders too. Your land here in Wisconsin is like a slightly wavy pancake. You want to see mountains, you got to come and visit Israel. Ringing the Sea of Galilee are mountains that range between 2,000 and 5,000 feet. And then in the distance, you can see Mount Hermon, snow-covered, and it's the snowmelt that actually supplies the water to the Sea of Galilee. In fact, keeps it nice and fresh so that the fish you catch there you can eat and that you can drink the water because the water moves through. It's also, now get this, you know, you might not think this is possible. The Sea of Galilee is 685 feet below sea level. You might think, what? How come all that low space doesn't just fill in with seepage? The rock that separates it from the Mediterranean is so tight, so watertight, water does not seep in. Like if this is the level of the Mediterranean Sea, here's the level of the Sea of Galilee. And then the Dead Sea at the bottom is lower still. The reason for that is that when God was making the surface of the earth, he didn't want everything to look exactly the same. He didn't want earth to look like a balloon, featureless, the same color, you know, the same shape, all just a tight surface. He wanted it all puckered. And just for the heck of it, like sometimes if you have ever made bread by hand and you're punching the dough to get it all ready to go before you put it in the pan, he kind of went like this with the side of his heavenly hand and he whacked the crust of the earth and his hand landed. God doesn't have a hand, but if he did, that's sort of how he did it. He made his word act like a big hand in the dough and he put a dent in the earth from the Lebanon Mountains all the way down to the African country of Mozambique. Thousands and thousands of miles have this crack, this cleft, this rift in the crust of the earth. And the deepest part of that rift is the Jordan River Valley, which is kind of interesting. I wonder if that had anything to do with why God chose to plant his nation there, his family there, and have so many of the biblical events take place right in that rift valley. So here we are in the Sea of Galilee, the Galilee Lake, 685 feet below sea level, surrounded by mountains. You can guess what that does to the weather around there. When winds come and there's shifting and there's like a temperature differential, that just whips around. It's almost like a chimney and it sucks the energy in. And that lake can be calm as all get out 1 minute, and then it gets choppy, and then there can become violent storms very soon. And I think that explains a little bit of how a bunch of boating professionals like Jesus' disciples got caught in a life-threatening situation. They're supposed to know better. They grew up around there. They're fish boys. They have grown up on the beach their whole life. They probably didn't need sandals because their feet were so calloused. Their feet and toes could probably grip a slippery deck of their boat or brace themselves on the inside. Their skin probably was burnt to leather from being outside in the wind and the sun every day. They knew fish, but even more, they knew boats, and even more, they knew water and wind and weather. They needed the wind to drive their little sails, and they needed to pay attention to its patterns so they would know how to row. And yet, they got caught in a vicious storm, just as the Edmund Fitzgerald did. People who were professionals, who should have known better, ended up in a life-threatening situation. And here's how it happened. Got a Bible near you? Crack it open to Mark chapter 4. Let's enjoy one of the Epiphany stories of the spectacular divine power and nature of Christ. Towards the end of the chapter, verse 35, we read, "When evening came, Jesus said to his disciples, 'Let's go over to the other side.'" He didn't mean the other side of the country. He meant the other side of the lake. This story is occurring in approximately the third quarter of Jesus' earthly ministry. And he had just decided to shift his teaching style a little bit and start including parables. I'm not sure if you ever noticed this. If you read through the Gospels, the life of Christ, he doesn't start his parable teachings right away. He waits till a little past the midpoint. I call it the third quarter. And Matthew's Gospel has a much fuller exposition of them in chapter 13. But Jesus ripped out like seven parables, and they've become very, very famous. Mark tells us a few of them. It was a long day. Jesus was tired. And then he says to the disciples, I don't want to spend the night here. He was in the northwestern coast of the Sea of Galilee and had been using the shoreline as kind of a handy classroom. And, you know, it kind of makes sense a little bit. I know at least once he actually got into a boat and pushed a little away from shore and then spoke to people sitting on the beach. That worked really well. And, you know, water can kind of reflect sound and kind of naturally amplified his voice. So he had been really working hard all day and said, let's go. I want to go across. We have an agenda. I got business on the other side of the lakes, things we must do. So let's go. Nobody talked him out of it. These were old sailors. They understood their lake and they got in. However, as I mentioned, the weather can change really fast on the Sea of Galilee because of those unique things, because it's so low. It's like a bowl sunk into the ground. It's not a high lake. It's a huge hole in the surface of the earth. Secondly, with those mountains around it, it's like a lake in a bowl and the winds just whip around in circles. And for another, it's very deep. There's a lot of water in that lake, even though it does not have as big a surface area as some of our lakes here in Wisconsin. So a storm comes up suddenly and caught him by surprise. Verse 37 says, a furious squall came up and the waves broke over the boat. There were also other boats with him. So there's a little flotilla and it was nearly swamped. So they're now bailing like crazy. Now it's night. And then of all things, Jesus is in the stern, that's nautical talk for the back of the boat, sleeping on a cushion. Isn't that an interesting thing? Sleeping. Sleeping. It's one of the most eloquent little descriptors of the humanity of Christ. He got tired enough every day to have to sleep just like us. He, just like us, had to check out and surrender and let sleep heal his mind and his tissue. He needed it, his 8 hours, as bad as your body has a right to expect 8 from you. Isn't that interesting? And that you think, now, did he not see this coming? Jesus' radar is way better than Siri's or Google's radar on my phone. Why did he check out when he actually had like put his team into danger, and not just their boat, but apparently a little flotilla of boats? What? What is going on here? And here's another what is going on. The disciples woke him up and said, Lord, help us. Actually, they didn't say that. That's what they should have said. What actually did they say? Teacher, what did they say? We're drowning. Hey, we're drowning. Haven't you noticed? Don't you care? They doubted his heart. They thought his superpowers had left him, that he's an idiot. They doubted his brain. They doubted his heart. Don't you care? And they might have doubted his muscles too. Maybe his superpowers have failed. And Jesus did something. He did some rebuking. You know that word, rebuke? Rebuke is what you say to your dog when you find a little lake in your living room. He got up and rebuked the wind and said to the waves, quiet, be still. And it did. I'll come back to that in a second. I'm like scratching my head over this word, rebuke. Like bad wind. Naughty wind. Naughty waves. Don't ever do that again. You know, and like shaking his finger at him or could give you a spanking. Rebuke. It's like, you're bad. And they were. See, that's the crazy thing about this. The Creator, who is Christ, all things were made by him. Remember John's gospel from Christmas Day? All things were made by him. Without him was not anything made that was made. He didn't make moving air and water to hurt his children. This is nature in rebellion against man, but in rebellion worse, against God. But whose fault is it? It's our fault. We poisoned. We human beings poisoned not only ourselves, it's so sad. We poisoned nature too. Scripture says that all of nature is in bondage to decay. It's like the world is sinful too. It's rotting away. It's broken. We broke nature. And so Jesus yelled at it as he sometimes yells at us because we are part of the destruction that Satan has brought to the universe. And it makes Jesus angry, but even more, it makes him sad. And he's so disappointed. Disappointed, first of all, at wind and waves that were invented by God to help us to blow beautiful clouds along and give us an interesting, constantly changing scenery in the skies to look at. Breezes that will push our sailboats along and create a gorgeous view, either watching them from on land or, if you're a little more adventurous, to get actually in there, grab the tiller, and let air let you go flying through the water. He created water for us to drink as a habitat for all the yummy creatures he placed in there. Not only yummy, but beautiful too, beautiful to look at and to enjoy. He made all this for us, and nature has turned on us and now attacks us. And he's so disappointed. He scolded the air and the water for going crazy and threatening to hurt people. And they obeyed. I'll come back to that in a second. But I want to look at the other rebuke too. He says to his disciples, and he rebuked them too, "Why are you so afraid? Do you still have no faith," meaning in me? This isn't blind faith. This is faith based on his word and the fact that he, Jesus, had delivered on everything he had promised or said he would do. This isn't like opening day of their seminary, like the day he called them into following him. They're supposed to have known better by now. And Jesus was very disappointed in them, but also had to give himself a low grade as their teacher, because every teacher worth a dime, and of course Christ is the greatest of them all, takes no pleasure in giving F's to students. That's a failure of the student. F equals failure. You have not demonstrated even basic competence in this project or field you're working in. But some of that F is on me because I did not figure out how to manage your interest, pique your interest, engage you, draw you out, release energy in you, and give you the confidence to move forward. Something's missing, and I have got to adapt my teaching to reach you, or you are going to begin this class ignorant, be ignorant in the middle, and you'll be just as dumb at the end. And some of that is on me. So teachers are in pain when they see their students floundering and failing, and they were. What was Jesus' mission for these 12 guys? It was not to make them all wealthy so that they would have fabulous portfolios to pass on to their kids and grandkids when they died. It was not to make them famous, although they actually did get super famous. All over the world, there's churches named after them, for Pete's sake. They're in the Bible. Every Christian who is able to read or has ears that work has heard their names and knows their story. So they did get mighty famous, but that wasn't why Jesus did it. He did it to build faith in their hearts, to connect them to him. He did not work with them to increase their grip on stuff like money, to make them more materialistic. He wanted them to attach their lives to him. He's the only thing that can lift them out of the chaos that is coming when the great destruction shall come to earth. Only connected to him will you hear the not guilty verdict. Only connected to him can you slide into your grave with a smile, knowing this: my body's going to take a brief nap here. My spirit's already going to fly straight to heaven, and I'm going to soar with the angels immediately. And I will not have to fear my past at all, for I've been given the gift of salvation. That is the most important thing. If you got that, you got everything. If you ain't got that, you got nothing. Nothing. And Jesus, in this way, illustrates the secrets to a couple of mysteries. Mystery number one. If he's supposed to be God, couldn't he see that storm coming? Why did he let there be a storm at all? I sort of wonder about that myself, because I've had the same whining musings about why there's COVID. I don't know how many times you've prayed, but I have prayed dozens and dozens of times. And really intensely too, like I had my heart into it, and I put my back into those prayers. I really meant it. I didn't mumble it. It was not like some of our quickie prayers, like, Lord, if you don't mind and you aren't too busy, it'd be nice if we would kind of let this happen. No, I got down to it. I like Jacob, I wrestled with God. I grabbed him, and he didn't sprain my hip like he did for Jacob. But I wrestled with God about COVID. Why didn't he stop it? Second, as the storm began intensifying and he's lying there sleeping, why was he sleeping? And third, even more, why did he let it go on that long? Why did he let the disciples get to the brink of where they thought they were going to drown? When the water was sloshing over, they're called the gunwales. That's the last lip of your boat. And the water now was coming in faster than they could bail it out. We're going to die tonight. He let them think we're going to die. Why? Why would he do that? And I think I know the answer, and I'm going to lay it out for you as well. He's looking at his disciples to see how they did on his quiz of what they had learned that day. Do you trust my intelligence and guidance and plans? Do you trust in my heart that I love you more than I love my own comfort? Do you trust in my muscles? Am I as mighty as you think I am? Am I as mighty as I've told you I am? Or do you think I'm more like Don Vito Corleone? Don Vito will do a favor for you. And he's got some superpowers. He's got a whole army of guys with guns who work for him. If you need a favor from Don Vito, you become obligated to him. You're in his debt and you owe him. But Don Vito has limitations to what he can do. He can send a group of guys to break the kneecaps of some man who has assaulted your daughter. But he can't stop the bullet that slammed into his body. He could not stop the heart attack that killed him in his tomato patch. And sometimes I think we look at Jesus as a sort of a variation of Don Vito Corleone. An interesting man with a couple of superpowers, but there are severe limitations. Jesus is giving all of us a heads up here. Honestly, now, here we're at the grand finale here. Here's what I'm really heading for most of all today. Here's the peak. How big is your Jesus? Do you worship a little Jesus like your buddy? Like some nice fella like Mr. Rogers who has a soft, sweet voice and tells you all to turn the other cheek and love one another and just try to be nice. Do you think of Jesus in a cardigan sweater and tennies? Is he just kind of a nice guy who wants all of us to be a little nicer to each other? Is he like Don Vito Corleone, a powerful man with some superpowers, but still severe limitations on what he could do? Or do you see him as the absolute Lord and Master of the universe, with every molecule of the physical universe obedient to him? How big is your Jesus? Is he big enough to trust with your hopes? How big is his heart? Does he love you, or does he only sell to you? Does he give you things, or does he squeeze you for it and make you beg or make you trade? Is his heart big enough to love you unconditionally, or can he love you only as much as the examples of human love that you see among one another? That's the best the Greeks and Romans could do as they invented their own gods. They invented stories of people with superpowers, but they were just as jealous, quarrelsome, forgetful, abusive as all the people that they saw around them on earth. God allowed the disciples to be squeezed and tested because it was a quiz, and they failed that one. Fortunately, they learned from their F, and they got better. Here's what I hope of you and me today, that we stand in awe of our Epiphany Lord as you watch what's clearly a human being, somebody who actually slept as the boat was getting smacked around. He was that tired. but who stood up in the boat at the time he had chosen, commanded wind and water to be silent and made all of that violent kinetic energy go away. Wow. How big is your Jesus? Is he big enough to do that? Then, is he loving enough to do that? And is he smart enough to pick his time? I think he lets us have our little boats in life get smacked around for the same reason that the disciples were afraid of drowning. And you know, there's nothing like snorting some water up your nose and maybe slipping and falling, and you can see how sluggish the boat's getting because it's filling up. They couldn't row anywhere. They could not steer. Sails were useless in that howling wind. God let it happen. First, for some humility. Who broke the world? We did. And we try so hard to control everything in our lives. And we can't control everything. It is good for us to be humbled now and then, to get right down on our knees and make ourselves small and come to God not saying, "Don't you care? I'm struggling right now." That would give you an F for your quiz as well. Just get on your knees and say, "Lord, have mercy on me. I trust in your compassion to me." Marvel at what he did. The same Lord who can rebuke wind and wave comes to you in the supper to guarantee your forgiveness, guarantee his love. And at just the right time, he will do for your storms in your life what he did with this one. Just hang on to him and trust him until he is ready to speak that word. I don't know what God has in mind for this COVID pandemic. Some people think it's going to become an endemic, meaning it's going to become like influenza and will hang around forever. I don't know. What I do know is that God is faithful and he's going to help us and be with us the whole time, no matter what. Signs and wonders in Epiphany time, let them inspire you to have complete trust that your Lord has a heart, that your Lord has a brain, and that your Lord has the muscles to carry it out. Amen.
This message was a production of St. Marcus Lutheran Church. For similar content, subscribe on iTunes, Google Play, or our YouTube channel. For more information about how to support our urban gospel ministry in Milwaukee, please visit stmarcus.org.